all across Wisconsin from Civic Media. This is Up North News Radio. Now, live from our Lake Wissota studio, here's the founding editor of Up North News, Pat Breitlove.
Good morning. Welcome back to Up North News Radio, unabashedly Wisconsin, and brought to you by Courier Newsroom, carried by our friends on the Civic Media Radio Network at 7:06 on this Friday morning, August 2nd. Nice to have you along this morning. Coming up this hour, we will ask former U.S. Attorney Jim Santel about Vice President Kamala Harris and how the time she spent prosecuting criminals might help her with moderate voters in this campaign. Mark Jacob will break down some of the, I would call, abysmal national media coverage of former President Trump's meltdown in front of black journalists. And we'll talk about the first week of the Paris Olympics with Dan Schumacher. That and more still ahead. If you'd like to join us along the way, the phone number here is 855-75-CIVIC, 855-75-CIVIC. You can also just send us an email with your suggestions, feedback, comments, what have you, at radio at upnorthnewswi.com. And again, get well soon, Brittany, who's whatever took her down has taken her down for the week. And hopefully we get to see her back here on Monday morning. So I can just tell you that all the other forecasts out there talk about it being just sunny and hot today and tomorrow. And then we start to get a cool down with slightly below average temperatures all of next week. So this full week of air conditioning, if you want to keep the humidity out, will finally come to an end, and we can all open up the windows again and maybe start to save a little money on the electric bills. Goodness knows I could use that.
Yeah, agreed.
From Rob in Tigerton. Good morning from Tigerton. It's sunny and 67 degrees, 85 hundredths of an inch of rain, and a spectacular thunder and light show last night. You have Olivia Newton-John week, Greece on Monday, and Xanadu on Friday. Oh, did we? Yeah, we did play Grease earlier this week, didn't
mm-hmm,
we? All right. Well, there, you know what? You can't play too much Olivia Newton-John.
Agreed.
On this show. and he says he's hungry for, I'm going to say that's a BLT, and that's a typo, that he's looking for a BLT sandwich. Because if I think that's a typo. If it's BLY, then you're going to have to tell me why you want a bacon, lettuce, and yogurt sandwich, Rob. That's that's on you. Tony Z, who it turns out his last name is Zimmerman, and he was not fond of hearing that Bob Dylan changed his name from Robert Zimmerman, and wants to point out that Robert Zimmerman is also his dad's name, and it's his birthday today, and it's his second day of retirement. So there you go. Bob Dylan, turns out he gave up music only 2 days ago, and his son Tony would like to wish him a happy retirement.
Your dad is Bob Dylan, Tony Dylan Zimmerman?
Uh-huh. No, it's not. It's
this is really funny to me, by the way. I don't really care what you all think. This is real fun for me.
And Rob does correct the record. It is a BLT. So, oh wait, a BLT with yogurt? No, I'm just kidding. that would be so just awful. Let's move over to the Up North News Daily Newsletter, shall we? Christina Laurie puts that together for us every day. You can count on that in your inbox Monday through Friday. And among the stories that are in there, some links to our earlier coverage of Kamala Harris, more about her background, her record, and also a story about the many billionaires lining up behind Donald Trump. Why might that be? She also has a link to a topic we discussed in our last hour, and that is the signature event at the Jackson County Fair, and that would be the Combine Demolition Derby. If you didn't hear that in the last hour, you can always listen back, head over to civicmedia.us and listen to our past episodes, listen to some of the other shows, find out what stations you can hear Civic Media programs on as you're going around the state of Wisconsin. And also in the newsletter, Christina writes that Sunday is National Chocolate Chip Cookie Day. And as she looked up some factoids about chocolate chip cookies, did you know, Mr. Bach, the average American eats about 35,000 chocolate chip cookies in their lifetime. And if that's true, I will die soon because I'm pretty sure I'm already at 35,000.
Oh, but boy.
I'm doing my part. I'm doing my part.
I think of all the times I didn't eat chocolate chip cookies, but in all the times I'm like, you know what? No one's going to miss this bag.
Christina did turn to Yelp to find out who's got reviews of the best chocolate chip cookies that are being made in Wisconsin. And then from the sweet to the decidedly, what would be the opposite of sweet chocolate chip cookies if you're talking about mustard?
A savory, robust mustard.
Okay, let's go from the sweet to the savory and robust. There's an article in there as well about the National Mustard Museum in, pop quiz for you, Middleton.
Oh, okay. All right.
It all started in 1992. More about the roots of the National Mustard Museum, how it came to be in Middleton, all in our newsletter. Sign up for it at upnorthnewswi.com. There's a clip here I'd like to play for you, and it goes way back to 1993. But I feel like it captures something that surely didn't surprise me as much as it surprised other people when former President Trump was appearing before the National Association of Black Journalists in Chicago this week. And the comments, there's no need to sugarcoat them, as a lot of other media will try to dance around it. No, they were racist comments. Of course they were. But that's the man's history. And I know that as somebody who's been a journalist for a very long time, I know that maybe I pay more attention and many other people paid more attention to Donald Trump over the years than most. To most, he was just, you know, that guy, that rich guy, that celebrity, that guy that liked to talk about himself all the time and had all the women and all the marriages and everything. But clearly there was something appealing about him to other people. But for those who knew him a little bit better, who followed his actual track record, the things that he say nowadays don't come as any kind of a surprise. In fact, because of his comments at the NABJ in Chicago this week, they're led to coverage of some of his earlier complaints or some other his earlier comments, shall we say, that drew complaints. Here, for example, is some audio from Donald Trump back in 1993 testifying in front of Congress. And it was about Native American casinos, and he didn't like that. He didn't like it because, of course, he had a casino in Atlantic City, which, like pretty much all of his business ventures, was about to fail. And, of course, he always has to blame somebody else. So it's not just that he blames Native American casinos, but, of course, has to go full-blown racist in the process.
Is this you discussing Indian blood? We're going to judge people by whether they have Indian blood, whether they're qualified to run a gaming casino or not?
That probably is me, absolutely. Because I tell you what, if you look at some of the reservations that you've approved, you, sir, in your great wisdom have approved, I will tell you right now, they don't look like Indians to me, and they don't look like the Indians. Now, maybe we say politically correct or not politically correct. They don't look like Indians to me, and they don't look like Indians to Indians, and a lot of people are laughing at it, and you're telling how tough it is, how rough it is to get approved. Well, you go up to Connecticut, and you look. Now, they don't look like Indians to me, sir.
Thank God that's not the test of whether or not people have rights in this country or not, whether or not they pass your look test.
Depends whether or not you're approving it, sir.
No, it's not a question whether I'm approving it. Mr. Trump, you know in the history of this country where we've heard this discussion before, they don't look Jewish to me.
Oh, really?
They don't look Indian to me. They don't look Italian to me. Mm-hmm. And that was a test for whether people could go into business or not go into business, whether they could get a bank loan. You're too black. You're not black enough.
That would be California Congressman George Miller mixing it up with Donald Trump. And, of course, you heard the condescension as George Miller was talking, going, yeah, whatever. Because that's the way Trump has always operated, as somebody who thinks he's, you know, smarter than you and because of who he is or what he says he is, which includes rich white businessman, you should somehow treat him better. And that if anybody is on par with him, who's not rich and white, they must have gotten help that they didn't deserve. Witnesses racist comments where he calls Elizabeth Warren Pocahontas, where there might be some legitimate critique to be said about something that Elizabeth Warren filled out, you know, on a piece of paper many years ago. But to go, you know, racist in your comments is something that we are still correcting some of our uncles at Thanksgiving dinner about how wildly inappropriate that is. But again, if you feel like you should be the one in charge, if you feel like you're the one who gets to determine what somebody's race is, you get to determine what Kamala Harris can say that she is, well, then no wonder you're completely tone deaf when you're showing up before a room of black journalists and making claims about race that aren't just insulting, but are rooted in things that render you fully unqualified to run, you know, a mom and pop shop, much less a business, much less the country. And for folks that still applaud him for that, you still have the right to vote, and I still have the right to tell you to take a longer look in the mirror as to why you feel the need to support something like that. And what else can you learn about how people who don't look like you have had to work harder to get where they are, including some of the help that has come along the way? The same help that we give to, you know, corporations, the same help that we give to low-income families to afford food or education, the things that rich white Republicans are trying to take away. We have a lot of ground to cover yet today. We've got the new unemployment numbers coming up shortly as we get a measure of the economy. We're going to talk to Jim Santel at least once, maybe twice in this hour. We've got so much ground that we have to cover from a legal standpoint. We're going to find out a bit more about how Kamala Harris, as a prosecutor, as a district attorney, as a U.S. senator, and as a vice president, how she can prosecute a campaign case against Donald Trump. Few people would know better than a former U.S. attorney. And at some point, we may also get into this multi-billion-dollar judgment, if I'm not mistaken, against the NFL about how they parceled out their games, their pay-per-view packages, and things like that. A jury made this big award, and the judge yesterday threw it all out. We'll get into that and more with Jim Santel. We'll talk about media coverage with Mark Jacob, and Dan Schumacher will be along later in this hour as well. Wherever you're listening around Wisconsin on this Friday morning, when you're here, you're up north. We're live from Lake Wissota on the Civic Media Radio Network. Back in a bit. Friday morning brings us our visit with Jim Santel. He hosts Amicus, a show every weekend here across the Civic Media Radio Network about legal matters, things that are in the news, maybe things you should know about. Catch it at 9 a.m. Saturdays, played back on Sundays as well. Jim Santel, good morning. How are you?
Pat, it's always a delight to be with you on a Friday morning. Lots and lots of things to talk about, and great to be in conversation with you and your listeners as well.
Looking forward to it. So let's start with the presidential campaign of Kamala Harris, because there does bring a different dynamic to the race, her being a prosecutor, when you have Democrats that often run on one end of a spectrum, and it's Republicans who tend to do the quote-unquote law and order thing, although in many cases that is a misnomer or it's just downright wrong, whether it's, you know, Republican budget austerity, which is actually what's defunding the police, or failing to call out crooked cops and, you know, painting all police with a broad brush. Meanwhile, on the Democratic side, now we have somebody who's run as tough on crime and who has put criminals away. So my question for you, as a former U.S. attorney, somebody familiar with criminal courts, what do you think Kamala Harris brings to the campaign that will help her with moderate voters when it comes to prosecuting her campaign case against Donald Trump?
Right. One of the things that I recall is when she was running for the nomination, she talked to her slogan was for the people. And again, people said, well, gee, that's just a nice slogan. But the reality is that what she was talking about is this commitment that all prosecutors have to do justice, to do what is right. I worked for Janet Reno for a couple of years, many years ago, and she would always say, you know, I'll take the heat for doing things. What is the right thing to do? And you might think, well, gee, that's awfully self-important of you, Jim, to talk about that sort of thing. But it really is what commissions all prosecutors. And there's a great phrase as well that talks about the notion that the government wins, the people win whenever justice is done. And that notion, I think, is animating not only what Kamala Harris is doing in this present campaign, but would also animate her in the presidency as well. Your purpose in the end is to make certain that the right thing happens, that justice is done. Sometimes, often that means that people who have violated our basic norms, our basic standards of conduct, do need to be prosecuted. There's something to be said about that. There are all sorts of reasons for doing that. We've talked a lot on this very broadcast, Pat, about the need for deterrence, the need to put people in a position where they can no longer harm us, all kinds of reasons to do that. But you almost always want to temper that and measure that with, of course, a concern about the victims, the people who are victimized by crime, and also what is best even for the larger community, of course. That's got to be at the top of the list. And so sometimes that means that you prosecute. Sometimes it means that justice commands that you don't prosecute, or that you make a recommendation, for example, at sentencing, that may not be throw the key away when you send them to prison. It may be that we engage in some sort of rehabilitation programs, the one-step programs we've talked about in the past, reentry programs, all kinds of things. And all that a long way to say that the purpose that Kamala Harris would bring to the presidency, her mission, her goal would be to be that balanced kind of person who understands the need for strength, but also the need for humanity and care and concern about the community, about victims, about, frankly, the defendants themselves, the people who have maybe committed crimes. You've got to have that balance. Your purpose, I had some colleagues who from time to time would say, you know, we're going to send those people to jail. Let's go out and get them. And the answer is no, that is not your purpose. Your purpose is to do what is right, to do what is good, and always keep in mind that your focus is on behalf of those people out there, your constituents, who rely upon you to be the balance and the temperament and the judgment that gets to a good result. So I think that animates her and gives her that balance in both directions.
But I think you know as well as I do, having been a candidate and incumbent, that when you do anything along the lines of restorative justice, any yes. kind of reform, that even when it's the right thing, when it's the most cost-efficient thing to do, you can immediately be painted as soft on crime. And so Kamala Harris, I think, is going to get it both ways. She's going to get hit for being too tough on crime for, say, black defendants, you know, who are committing drug crimes. And she's going to be accused of soft on crime for anything she might have supported in the way of restorative justice. But I also know she's been around long enough to expect both of these things and probably have proper responses at both ends of the spectrum.
She absolutely will. And you have to rally some of those things. So you know what? That putting people in prison in appropriate circumstances, that does meet the needs and interests of the community. But as you say, the restorative justice type things, probationary statuses that include reentry programs to ensure that there's an economic support for people coming out of prison or people who are coming out of the criminal justice system. And you've got to be able to show, and they're out there, there are statistics that show that indeed they are cost effective, they do work. And then you have to also rally some of the anecdotes, right? You've got to get some of the people out there who are going to say, you know what, I was given a second chance, I was given an opportunity, and this is what happened in my instance. Now I'm a productive member of society. I've got a family. I don't have a family. I've got a business. I don't have a business. I am doing something productive. And that was because a prosecutor made that balanced judgment. Kamala Harris out there, other people. I'd like to think I was in that category as well as were other U.S. attorneys under the Obama administration, the Eric Holder administration, who also basically said, do that balanced work, not to say that you will not get the identification as being too soft on crime, but that comes with the program. Just one footnote to this, it also drives me crazy, I have to tell you, when in political campaigns, people describe, whether it's defense counsel prohibited from from serving on behalf of the people because you defended people. No, those folks are also a critical part of the criminal justice system. How dare you? How dare you attack people because they have done something that advances what the interests of the community are, including representing people? That's a part of our system, ensuring that they are not convicted if indeed the government has not proven its case, but also providing them with representation in those situations where they are convicted. That too is a part of the system. Again, I so recoil in abject dismay and disappointment when people say, well, you know, that candidate, that person once represented defense counsel, was defense counsel representing defendants. Equally and important, it's the same kind of thing. You've got to have balance. You have to understand how the system works. And in the end, you simply have to articulate the reasons why that balance is the best way. Not soft on crime. Eric Holder and all of us always talked about smart on crime, right? That was his initiative. That's what Kamala Harris will be talking about.
We talked at last hour with Kia Vakil about the package of reforms that President Biden's put forward for the Supreme Court. We've talked to you about it in the past. We're going to cover that in the future as well, so I don't want people to think we forgot about it. But can you come back in about a half hour when Dan Schumacher's here, and let's talk about that NFL TV case where the judge threw out the jury's verdict and this huge award. Can we chat with you later on about that this hour?
Let's do just that. Looking forward to it, Pat, as always.
All right. Sounds great. Jim Santel, former U.S. attorney, is here with us. And he, of course, hosts the show Amicus, a Law Review. You can hear it live on Saturday mornings from 9 to 11 on Civic Media stations around Wisconsin. Learn more about the show and which stations at civicmedia.us. Jim, thanks so much for the usual visit, and we'll catch you again in just a little bit.
We'll be with you shortly. Looking forward to it, Pat. Thanks so much.
All righty. And when we come back, Mark Jacob will be here. It's been quite a week, again, watching media try to cover Donald Trump when some of the easiest layups the media misses. Yes, it's still Yacht Rock Friday. It's still summertime, isn't it? 7:34 on Up North News Radio. The new jobless numbers are out for the month of July, a little under what was forecast. 114,000 jobs were added to the economy. Unemployment rose to 4.3%. It wasn't that long ago that 4.3% unemployment seemed unattainable and would have been a miracle. And here we are. A lot of folks are going to try to say that this is bad news, that there are only 114,000 jobs added to the economy. Same folks who would forget that if that number was, say, 214,000 jobs, then they'd be talking about inflation. You just can't win with some economics reporters. Mark Jacob monitors them and so many others and joins us every Friday here on Up North News Radio from Chicago. Mark, how are you?
I'm doing good.
You agree with me too, right? It's kind of a lose-lose when you're reporting economic numbers during a Democratic president administration.
And let's remember, Trump had a net loss in jobs. So, yeah. You know, that doesn't get mentioned much.
No, it does not. So this week was interesting. I think captured best by a Washington Post headline that talked about Trump appearing before the National Association of Black Journalists. And I think maybe the Times did this too. And the headlines tried to portray it as a Kamala Harris problem. Like, yeah. She's got the quandary now that Trump has questioned her race. And you compare that to the international headlines that say, in so many words, Trump makes racist comments about his black candidate. And you just wonder, where did this disconnect happen with American journalism versus the rest of the world?
Yeah, the exact headline in the Washington Post was, "Harris faces a pivotal moment as Trump questions her black identity." So the fact that this person who's been black her entire life is said that she just recently turned black by some lying racist means that, boy, she's in big trouble. She's real. It's going to be tough on her. It's like it's just twisted. It's like it's through the looking glass crazy for them to cast it this way. So and they actually ended up rewriting the headline a little bit, but not enough.
A little bit. Yeah, go ahead. I'm sorry.
No, I mean, what about the pivotal moment for Trump? I mean, will there ever be one, or is the whole racist thing built in? And I mean, I just wonder about it, and I wonder why people don't just say Trump says racist things. I mean,
right.
This is no longer, Pat, it's no longer someone's opinion or someone's interpretation or any of that. What he did on that stage at the NEBJ conference in Chicago was flat out racist. It was just racist, and it was objectively racist. And if you can't call it that, then I don't know how you can be a journalist.
And that's where Jennifer Rubin comes in, who's nobody's going to you know, mistake for a flaming liberal. And she says in a post to the media, "This is a test. Will you keep Trump's racism on page one for 3 weeks and demand that he exit the race and press every Republican to comment on it and consult African-American studies experts and talk to communities of color? You know, do your job the way you did on Biden's age."
Right.
And I mean, there's no false equivalence there whatsoever. And there was a time in this country, Mark, when that's exactly what national media would have done, was first said, those are crazy remarks, and then spent the rest of the time saying, what would America be like with such a wildly racist president? And now they've lost their words.
Yeah, it's just baked in. He has managed to achieve something here because it's this Trump, the whole Trump being Trump thing. But that doesn't mean that, you know, the guy's running for president. I mean, the guy is running for dictator, really, which is the scariest thing. But I don't understand why you can't take that seriously and why you think that's old news. Oh, well, he's always been that way. That's the kind of thing he says. You know, when he said over this last weekend, he said that no one would need to vote anymore if they voted for him this time. You know, they asked Chris Sununu about that on ABC News, and he said it was a classic Trumpism. And they let him get away with it. It was let's ask you about Biden now. You know, and it's like, instead of saying, what the heck do you mean by a classic Trumpism? What's a classic Trumpism? Does that mean that he's allowed to say outrageously crazy things all the time, and that's just normal? It's classic? What do you mean, Mr. Sununu? That's the kind of questions that should have been followed up with, but it wasn't. I mean, it's a classic Trumpism, and then outro. You know, you're allowed to just get away with that kind of thing.
Well, it comes to a theme that we've hit often in these segments, and it is the focus of your most recent Stop the Presses newsletter, which folks can get over at stopthepresses.news. Along with his video series of Media Misses with Stephen Beschloss. But this week's article is headlined, "The Political Media Are Entertaining Us to Death. MAGA Fascism Wins When Storytelling Gets in the Way of Truth-Telling." And Mark, I don't know if I'm going to assume that's yours. That might be the subhead of the year, simply because it just says it so succinctly. You're letting storytelling get in the way of truth-telling. And there's such a huge, you can be a storyteller, absolutely, but you got to start with the truth.
Yeah, well, you know, this has been a trend, you know, and I'm an old graybeard here in journalism. You know, like it was 4 decades I was in the daily newspaper business. And I saw the term storytelling emerging, you know, near the end of my career even more. And, you know, and people just wanting to kind of turn news stories into novels, in effect, and make everything dramatic and everything. Here's the story arc and all that other stuff, which is fine if you got it and if it's that kind of story. But when you're talking about political media, you know, getting the facts out is the main thing. And part of the real problem, I think, in media today is just this lack of focus, this following bright, shiny objects. So whenever something new shows up, you just got to chase after it like a child. And it's basically shallow, Pat. I mean, it's like, here we are, 3 months before what I think is the most important election of our lifetime. And the media is just acting like, well, what's new? I'm kind of bored right now. And there was even an article in the Washington Post, I guess it was last weekend, where they said, boy, our reporters are really excited about this ever since Biden's disastrous debate performance and the assassination attempt and the emergence of Kamala Harris. Because before that, they were really bored. And I'm thinking, what was the situation before that? The situation before that was that here we were in the midst of a horrible threat to democracy with a guy running for dictator. So, you know, if that bored you, then there's something wrong with you.
Yeah, it makes you wonder what it is that they have to see before they take seriously the threats that are out there. And what I'm saying is, I think their honest response, a lot of the national media folks, if you could ask them on the inside, is that, well, I'm going to be okay no matter what. I'm going to have stuff to write about. I will live comfortably. I will dine comfortably. And, you know, not to be maudlin here, but it's not until they actually see, you know, an American journalist, you know, dragged out in the street or something like you'd see in Russia, that they'd understand that this could happen. But why wait until it actually happens to call out the possibility that it actually could happen here?
Yeah, well, you know, I like to, you remember that old Russian saying that says, you know, or the Soviet saying that said that when comes time to hang the capitalists, they will compete with each other over who will sell us the rope. Remember that old saying? Well, yeah. I think there's a similar one with journalism where when it comes time to march the journalists out of the newsroom at gunpoint, they will compete with each other for the exclusive rights to cover it.
Yeah, I can completely see that. So let's turn to, it's not just Trump's racism. It is all over the right-wing media landscape. You've got J.D. Vance making comments that, you know, Kamala Harris doesn't, you know, her accent doesn't match where she comes from or wherever she comes from. Again, right. this undertone of, you know, if you're not white, you don't really know where you came from. And the same goes on Fox News. And I wonder, Mark, if we're still, and I'm sorry to beat a dead horse here, but I worry that we're still not seeing nearly enough outing, not just of the politicians, but of the right-wing media figures themselves. I mean, yeah. CNN had that for a while, and of course, then they fired, you know, one of the guys who was doing critical media coverage of Fox and the rest of the right-wing landscape.
Yeah, I mean, there is something about that. And I also wonder, you know, a lot of these things that are coming out about Vance were things from before he got elected to the Senate. So how aggressive were the media, and how aggressive was the Democratic opposition when he ran for the Senate? I mean, I know he was running against another nut in the Republican Party, so it was kind of a nut on nut race. And then, you know, and it's Ohio, and unfortunately Ohio has become, you know, rather right wing. Although I hope that they will reelect Sherrod Brown for Senate. So maybe, you know, there's hope. But yeah, the Vance thing is it is weird that now it's all coming out in a big way, because the things are awful. I mean, it's all this othering, you know. And Vance is married to the daughter of Indian immigrants, so yeah. His kids are biracial. So what is he doing? I mean, these people who will just sacrifice any sense of decency.
Oh, and throw your family under the bus the way Ted Cruz did multiple times.
Right.
His father, his daughters, you know, whatever it takes to get something like that done. The lack of press vetting is noteworthy. And so is just simple follow-ups like that. It takes nothing to add to a story. Vance, comma, who has biracial children of his own, comma, that's not a political statement. I think it adds proper context to what the reader should know about the nature of his comments.
Right, right. That would be the case. And the thing that I find with this whole we don't know where she came from kind of stuff, even though we kind of know she was born in Oakland, California, which is part of the United States.
Yeah.
But if this othering is just so disgusting in a country like America that's really built on opportunity and people coming here with talent and ambition and making something of themselves. Pat, I got to tell you, I think that the modern Republican Party is unpatriotic. I think they just don't have the values that I was brought up thinking were American values, you know, where you didn't like, where you welcomed new ideas and you welcomed people. And again, she's from Oakland, California, and they're trying to other her. And they do this because they don't have any new ideas. They just the thing that gets me, they're going to the golden oldies because they just have no ideas. And they're hoping nobody notices that they have no plans to do anything to help people.
No, that's the thing. You're missing any kind of proactive plan on this. From a local standpoint, I just want to illustrate this, how this works on the local level. We have a congressman here, Derek Van Orden, who has been getting just ridiculous amounts of softball coverage for showing up at a farm tour. This week it was showing up at a mobile home park and talking about the money that he's going to get for them so that they can upgrade their water systems and add fire hydrants and things like that. And Mark, I don't mean to make it about me here, but I remember a time when we'd get a story like that, and I'd make sure that that story included something along the lines of, it's contained in a budget bill that Derek Van Orden voted against, or Van Orden, who often rails against federal spending, did not say what he would offset that money with to bring New Altoona. Again, not political, adds the proper context to what somebody's saying rather than just letting them spoon feed you like baby birds.
Right. I mean, well, it's so easy to say things, but what are you going to do about it? And people have records, you know, and that's why this whole, you know, when every time a Republican member of Congress brags about some bridge that's being built in their district, I love it when journalists actually go and look at it and find out that they voted against it. And that's got to happen more often because they'll lie as often as they're allowed to.
Yeah. Really quickly, then, the prisoner swap that President Biden was working on and working on and working on, and it was built thanks to personal relationships with leaders, right, even as he was being chased from office. Okay, I can make a point about that. But to me, the larger point is that the Wall Street Journal, whose reporter this was, and several other important entities couldn't take even half a second to slip thank you to President Biden in their self-congratulatory remarks.
Yeah, it's really cheap. And then you have Fox News kind of whining about it. And you know, if it was on the other side, they were, you know, they would just be, you know, I just, again, Pat, I just think the right wing in this country has become unpatriotic. Mm-hmm. I don't think they want America to succeed right now. I think they want it to fail so that they can take over and do whatever they want.
And it's a heck of a way to run a newsroom, if in fact you can still even call it a newsroom. Mark Jacob, get his newsletter at stopthepresses.news. Mark, thank you so much. Have a great weekend.
See you later.
When we come back, Dan Schumacher is going to be with us, and Jim Santel is going to come back in to talk about that NFL court case as well after this. All right, we're back. Dan Schumacher's joining us as well from Northland College. Greg Bach and Dan Schumacher give us our Friday Grateful Dead moment, and former U.S. Attorney Jim Santel is back with us as well. Jim, where are you on the Grateful Dead spectrum? Are you closer to Greg and Dan, or are you over like me where I can name exactly one Grateful Dead song?
You know, I'm probably a little close to you. I like to think I'm a centrist where we should all be, right, when it comes to Grateful Dead.
So, I'm for that.
We should all be.
I like that.
Very, very well said. Mr. Schumacher, how are you?
I'm well.
Thanks for letting me borrow a little of your block here, but I thought since we're talking sports, this would be very interesting that a jury had awarded nearly $5 billion in damages in an antitrust case against the NFL for the way that they handled their Sunday ticket. And a judge yesterday just kind of looked at it all and said, nah, I'm throwing it all out. Jim, can you give us a little bit of background on the case and then what the judge did?
Sure. This is Judge Philip Gutierrez ruling on Thursday, as you just said, Pat, that basically he said that the testimony of two of the witnesses for the subscribers and has a trial, and a couple of the testimony that says Dr. Daniel Rasher, Dr. John Zonin, they come in and they talk about the damages aspect of this. What are the amount of money? And the judge apparently, this is what is a head scratcher, lets that in during the course of the trial. And then when the jury returns this again with a B, $4.7 billion, does this verdict, then he comes back and he says, well, I don't find that their testimony was sufficiently supported to give you a little bit of evidence.
And he looked at their methodology. And that's the part I don't get. Why didn't he at the time say, no, I'm sorry, jurors, disregard what that is.
Exactly. And so here's your bit of Zen evidence for this morning on a Friday morning. Something called Daubert, D-A-U-B-E-R-T, and it requires that all judges, state and federal, basically look to the expertise, figure out whether it's credible, and either include it or exclude it before the jury hears it. Daubert hearings, constantly. You've heard these in the news. I don't get why the judge is doing this, other than perhaps he's responding. Maybe he made a mistake. More likely, he's looking at this and saying, gee, it's so excessive. which could be another basis for overturning it. But that's not what he's saying. He's saying this evidence came in, the jury was tainted by it, and for that reason, I've got to throw it out. Again, it's going to be go up on appeal. We'll see what the appeals court does on this as well.
this is a case that's been going on for 10 years. Dan, yes. as you know, you and I spend some time in bars, and we've been there when like a game is on Apple TV or, yeah. You know, God, what was one of them on Peacock or Freevee or Tubi, whatever.
Amazon, and
you know how frustrating it is for these bar owners, restaurant owners, others who, you know, I mean, they've got a thin margin often as it is, and you want to go in there and you want to watch a Bears game in Wisconsin and they're paying for Sunday ticket and then told that they can't get a game or something. You know how frustrating this is to fans, much less bar owners.
It sure is. It's frustrating to the entire fan base, especially that last year I thought it was really ridiculous to be. It's on Peacock, not NBC, which is the same one and the same, you know.
Right.
And then you got to bring a computer in. I remember the one place.
Oh, God, that's back. Right,
you
yes.
You bring in your laptop computer to be able to get it and hook it into the TV. It makes you search around to find where you're going to – how you're going to watch your favorite team.
Okay, so now that's the pros, Dan. Now bring in college and the fact that you've got all these multi-billion-dollar contracts, you know, to carry the SEC or the Big Ten, and the conferences are changing left and right. I mean, I can't even imagine how anybody in college athletics looks at that and thinks that this is a workable system right now. I mean, this whole thing is just a spider web of dollars and confusion for the viewers. I have no idea where this is going from here, and I don't think you as an insider have any better idea.
Well, you know, we're at noon today, the Pac-12, or where USC, UCLA, Oregon, they all used to play, longtime conference folds at noon today because they're getting rolled into the Big Ten. So you got four major conferences that are super conferences. And they're going to break away from the NCAA at some point to run their own ship. It will allow them to directly pay athletes instead of using this NIL language that we're basically hiding behind, knowing that the athletes are being compensated now. The thing I have a problem with is it creates even more inequity that's already exists from a Title IX standpoint, many different angles, the inequities. But it's all about money.
Like
we discussed, every Big Ten school last year got a check for $47 million because of the Big Ten network.
So
it's an enormous amount of money.
If I look for one positive aspect, maybe that's where it comes from, is that with more channels and more streaming than ever before, is it getting easier for Division III, you know, your UW, Claire's, everybody else, are they getting more exposure and more money as a result of more streaming options, or is it still just table scraps to help keep the big dogs happy?
It's table scraps. We, you know, Division III, there's no revenue generation other than tuition dollars. Mm-hmm. At UW-Eau Claire, my stay there, you know, at least we had three television stations and a sports talk radio. So I bought my airtime and to get my product out there,
sure.
Which helped appease a lot of the corporate sponsors that I have.
Yeah.
Had and stuff. But, you know, you go to places like Northland right here, or as I'm looking at beautiful Lake Superior, there is no television station here. There is no opportunity to create a different revenue stream for your department. So Division III, especially the East Coast, they're saturated with Division III schools, all private liberal arts schools.
Mm-hmm.
It's the revenue is just, it's tuition driven, not so much revenue, the ticket sales, TV money. There is no TV money. Most schools have to pay to be on the radio.
Yep.
It's a different world.
We don't have the time to get deeper with Jim into the NCAA and all the college legal stuff. We're definitely going to do that at some point. But I promise we talk about the Olympics. So you each get about 15 seconds to tell me what you've liked best or what you're looking forward to. Jim, anything favorite for the Olympics here?
Right. Well, again, it's hard to overcome the splendor, the amazing glory of that opening ceremony, right? That remains with us forever. And again, I realize there are always aspects of that that people find ways to pick at, but what a celebration of internationalism and of Paris and of France as well.
Yeah,
that's amazing. And then you've got these women, of course, out there who are just absolutely chewing up the scenery and doing these amazing things, right?
Such incredible athletes. Dan, how about you real quick, what you've been watching?
I've been watching, you know, between the one swimmer and Biles, the gymnast. I mean, mm-hmm. the amount of medals they've won over the years is amazing. I particularly like to dig a little deeper on how that boxing match took place between female actually quit. So I don't know what the real facts are.
Yeah, there's a lot that has to be a lot of disinformation we have to address on that. So we'll take care of that next week as well. Dan Schumacher, Jim Santel, thanks both guys for double duty. Appreciate it very much.
Always a pleasure.
All right, Greg will be back for Matt and Air on Air at 10 o'clock. You all have a great weekend. I'm Pat Kreitlow. We will see you Monday morning right back here up north.